Speaking of happy things, do you like roller coasters? I have a friend who has on their bucket list to visit every amusement park and try out the highest roller coaster in those parks before they die. Whenever I've been to an amusement park, I notice the longest lines are by the biggest roller coaster. So there must be a lot of people that concur with that sentiment. Personally, though, I do not like roller coasters. I don't like that sensation of being dropped. There are lots of other rides at the amusement park that I like, the spinning and twirly ones and stuff, but I don't like being dropped. So when I visited the Holy Land and got to go up that mountain of the Transfiguration, Mount Tabor, the road up it is very twisty and turny. And you have to go back down this way too. And you look down over the side of the bus and it's a sheer drop down the side of the mountain. And it was not my idea of a good way to be with God. It's the closest to a roller coaster I ever want to get. Actually, it turns out to be a good metaphor for what took place on that mountain. Jesus has finished his teaching and healing and good news ministry, and he knows there are many people in the crowds that love him, and he also knows that much as those people love him, just like with any challenge to the status quo, there's gonna be pushback. And he knows that it's gonna coalesce in Jerusalem, where all those who benefit most from the status quo have their power base. But he's journeying there anyway to confront them. To prepare for this conflict ahead, to get strength for this wild ride that he knows is to come, he doesn't go to the gym, doesn't go to the library, he goes into prayer. And he invites a few friends to go with him to support him in prayer. Come pray with me, just as he's going to do much later in Jerusalem when he goes to Gethsemane. But these friends, his disciples, they don't understand the implications of his mission or even why he might need the strength found in prayer, and certainly not why he wants them to pray for him. They're so lulled by this amazing popularity around him that, just like later in Gethsemane, they get bored with prayer and fall asleep, get sleepy. They were so enamored by being part of this glory of being around this fancy, miracle-performing Jesus that they refused to listen. They just could not hear it when he told them that the Messiah would suffer and die. So it's no wonder that when his glory is affirmed on that mountaintop and the voice from heaven says, "Listen to him! Wake up and listen. Hear him when he says that glory comes through suffering and the cross. Listen to his passion predictions and his teaching about the demands of discipleship that all had preceded this mountaintop theophany. Peter and the others were so wrapped up in the glory aspects of following Jesus, they couldn't hear the counter message about the sacrificial aspects of being his disciples. If they'd listened, they would have heard that the roller coaster ride was coming, and they would have joined Jesus in being diligent in prayer. But Jesus he may not have gotten support from them, did get support from others when he prayed, just as we do, even when it seems that our friends don't get what's going on with us in our lives. While he's praying, he's joined by other saints, Moses and Elijah, who speak to him about his coming exodus, his journey through death that will bring freedom to God's people. Not a smooth sailing, but a roller coaster of hosannas, humiliation, death, resurrection. You may have heard people who promise that if you just believe, your life will be smooth sailing, happy and successful and charmed, and nothing bad will ever happen to you. Just believe, have faith. Theologians call that the theology of glory. The gift of the season of Lent is a call to listen to Jesus' theology of the cross. Lent invites us to a time to retreat into worship and into listening to Jesus, to set aside a time to be immersed in the cross, to be gathered in prayer. We are invited to follow the command, listen to him, through intentional conversation with God through prayer. The story of the Transfiguration begins by saying Jesus went up on the mountaintop to pray. And in that prayer, he's transfigured, transformed. Prayer can transform us too into new people who can do new things. In and of itself, prayer, time with God, you know, it can be very delightful, so much so that we don't want to leave it. What a friend we have in Jesus. Peter wanted that mountaintop experience to last forever, just to sit there with Jesus and Moses and Elijah. He was going to build them huts so that they could stay overnight, just stay. And yet, listening to Jesus means hearing his call to discipleship, to serving others. He went down the mountain after this and healed a child. For Christians, there's always that tension between contemplation and activism. And this is reflected in the church. In a single congregation, there can be people who mostly work at seeing that our worship happens in good order, and then there's the others that judge the church on how much social ministry the congregation is doing. So our answer to the question, does God want prayer or action, is yes. It's a both and. In the second reading, we heard it began with, since we have such a hope, we act with great boldness. It turns out that the glory is not only on the mountaintop, but also down in the valley where God's work of healing is being done. The disciples that had been left down in the valley couldn't heal the child. They couldn't get rid of the disease demons, because they thought that following Jesus was all about partaking of the glorious awesomeness of helping people and then having them praise them for their good deeds. They thought it would be about attending to people the way that Jesus did and astounding them. They wanted to glow like Jesus. They don't get it. That the real glory is not on the mountain, but with the people below. They don't get it, that it's prayer that lifts the veil and reveals God's view. They want to skip the boring prayer part and go straight to the miracle working. For Jesus, prayer leads to the action that he's about to take in Jerusalem on their behalf. Action to secure our exodus from an existence where death has the last word. His journey, his exodus, his action to liberate us, his people. And to prepare for that hair-raising ride, He retreats into prayer. The retreat into prayer, fasting from the world and its demands, leads for Jesus inevitably to a return to the everyday world of human need, where Jesus heals the sick and opposes the forces of evil. There are whole programs that are built around the notion of action reflection. You learn about something and think about it, then you do something and experience something, and then you discuss it with others or write about it in your journal, and then as you do, you're reflecting on what it meant, unpacking your reactions, and then that leads into more actions. We see that pattern in the biblical narrative. Jesus engages in teaching and healing actions. He retreats into prayer, and he takes the leadership of his movement up to a mountain to experience the transfiguration. And they reflect on it by misinterpreting it, wanting to remain in the moment of being with God in worship and praise. And then Jesus leads them to a corrective action by taking them down the mountain, where their misinterpretation is exposed in powerlessness. When they expected that their experience should have empowered them. When they came down the mountain and Jesus heals the boy, Peter, James, and John saw God working, not just in a vision, but in action on behalf of a person. If worship for us is a retreat, it's not a retreat from the world, but a retreat in order to come back to the world in love, mercy, and grace. In Lent, we have a chance for extra worship. This extra worship in Lent invites you to exactly that, to retreat in order to go back into the world with mercy, love, and grace. Jesus's prayer and worship is inseparable from his action that brings God's work into real life. His mission is both to be and to do. Lent gives us time to reflect on what that means. This pivot scene, where the roller coaster of the Jesus story goes from the high point to begin the descent, this scene, maybe you missed this little piece in the reading, takes place on the eighth day. In symbolic terms, the eighth day comes after the first 7 days of the completion of the creation as we know it. And so, the eighth day begins the era of God's new creation. This roller coaster ride is headed to another plane, into a new creation. And you're invited to get on board and figure out what that means in your own worlds. And we, along with those first disciples, have the whole journey to Jerusalem to figure out just what that meaning is for us. And for that, we can say, thanks be to God. Amen.